Land of the Purple. You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what is going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Once again, Eddie Greer, your host of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. This is, I had to do a double take on this, episode 84. Yes, that's right, K-State Nation. Episode 84 of the podcast where we discuss all things K-State here in Manhattan, Kansas, where I currently still live at. Before, as I take a swig of this water here, before we get this thing going, obviously, if you're a new subscriber to the podcast, especially if you're a K-State fan, the Purple Project Podcast, get it wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple, Audioboom, Amazon, Player FM, and more. The Purple Project Podcast here, approaching the end of January, already here, the new year of 2022. Yeah, so this episode, obviously, we will talk, we will look ahead to the AFC Championship game, and I gotta tell you, man, the Chiefs have played probably the more exciting games out of any NFL football team probably this season. We'll get to that to cap off this end of this episode. But we're going to obviously talk about the, whatever you want to call it, bad, ugly, whatever you want. We're going to start with men's basketball and do that. My weekly co-host for the podcast, as usual, coming from San Diego, California, where he, I don't know how far he is from Los Angeles, but he's not too far from L.A., none other than Alex Aiden. Double A, what's happening?
You're right, LA just up the road.
Just up the road, a couple hours north of me. Now, my brother's there, if you want to count that. You know, blood is in Los Angeles. But myself, San Diego, a couple hours away. About 100 miles for anybody who's curious, which probably is nobody listening to this, so I'll just move on. Eddie, I'm doing well. All is good here. But, You said it before we started recording. So I just need to hit the record button. Because, like, we started to go. On a phone call. Because the basketball team is not, the men's basketball team is not lacking content for us to talk about, things for us to complain about. Last week we came on the podcast, we were talking about two wins over two top 25 teams, and we're coming on now talking about two losses against two top 10 teams, which is nothing to be ashamed of. I never thought they would win either one of these games, which I made clear last week. I said I don't think that they'll get in. That would be a bonus if they snatch one. I said I think they'll play a close game at KU, and they did. And I said I thought they'll get blown out in Baylor, and they did. So it wasn't anything that I didn't predict, but it's the way that those games happened, I think, is what has left me a little more frustrated. So we obviously have a lot to get into with the basketball game. I did not know that the K-State men's basketball team was going to proceed to blow another 17-point lead. Their second blown 17-point lead of the year on the Big 12 play. Didn't foresee that coming. I thought that KU would make a run, and I thought the game would end up somewhat tight. But when K-State was up, and I knew when K-State was up 50-34 at halftime, there was no way in hell K-State shoot the ball like that in the second half. But I still thought, you're up by 16, they'll be able to fend them off. I mean, they'll be able to hold them enough to get this win. I really thought they would be able to. And one of the things we talked about in the podcast, Eddie, was trying to not, don't give KU extra possessions and try to get yourself more possessions. Like, you want to end up with more possessions than KU. You know, you don't want to give KU extra possessions because they're a high-scoring team. They're gonna run the score up. If you do, well, when you get that rebound at 45-23, you're giving them extra possessions. So, not ideal. So we obviously have a lot to jump in there. And then, as about as predictable as could be, you know, K-State's coming off that emotional loss to KU, and of course they lay an egg at Baylor. And if you come in not ready to play against number 4 team in the country on the road, you're gonna get your A money sign beat, and pretty good. And that's exactly what happened to them. They came in not ready to play, and Baylor. Never gave him a shot in the game. So, you know, that's a bummer of a week for them. But on a positive note, Mayo Police sets the record for most points in NCAA history on the women's side with 61 against Oklahoma. They got a huge dominating win over Oklahoma at home. They did lose by 18 on the road to number 9 Texas. Was it yesterday? But that was still a really cool moment against Oklahoma. And it really announced that she's coming back. She's coming back for her senior year next year. So if you're a K-State fan, that's a good thing. That means we're going to get another year of watching her and then the special talents that she has. So that's a really neat thing. And, I find the thing. I retweeted this because I saw it at the Big 12 today. They tweeted out the leaders, the NCAA women's leader, basketball leaders in the six categories of points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, field goal percentage, blocks, and steals. Ayoka Lee was the leader in 3 of those 6 categories in the Big 12 alone. She was a leader in points per game in the Big 12, field goal percentage, and blocks per game. So, for those who don't know, she's averaging 25.3 points a game. She is averaging with a fast field goal percentage of about 59% from the field, and she is 68 block shots, which is 20 more than the next highest player. So she is dominating. And Eddie, she was just about on 4. She's number 2 in rebounding. She's averaging 10.9 rebounds a game. So she's literally half a rebound away from being on 4th and 6. So just puts you in perspective of how great of a year she's having. Just an amazing year for Ayoka Lee. So I know we'll probably talk about her a little bit too. But the men's team, we got a lot to unpack there, and they got a huge game coming up on Saturday. I mean, big game against Ole Miss that I think it's a must win.
A few hours ago, I recorded something on Ayoka Lee, which will be out tomorrow. So I already shared some of that already on that recording, which will be heard tomorrow as well. So yeah, definitely. And Monday, I recapped that tremendous performance by her as well. So. Yeah, that was some performance right there. That's also exciting. That brings up news to me as well that she will be coming back. A little breaking news on the Triple P podcast. So that's awesome news for Jeff Mini and the rest of that basketball team there as well. So that's awesome. Awesome from a young talent like Ayoka Lee. But on the flip side, yeah, as I'm getting fully back, almost full strength, not quite there yet, but getting close. I must have got sick watching performance of this men's basketball team last couple of days because, this kind of been the theme of this men's basketball team really since conference play started, especially at home for whatever reason. Yeah, I had the same feelings as you. At halftime, right? We have this big lead, 16-point lead advantage.
Yep.
And I actually said it on the when I recapped this episode, which went almost 20 minutes. I could have went in a whole hour. But, I said, And I said it then, I'm going to say it right now, that KU's going to make a run. You know it.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Weber, you knew that KU, you're going to come out guns blazing, right? You have to be ready for it. And
yep.
K-State, they weren't ready for it. They were not ready for it. And to me, the second half, that took forever to end. For whatever reason.
Oh, yeah. You just wanted the clock to run out. I mean, that's really all you were trying. At that point, you're just like, come on, clock. Just come on. Just get it going. It was a race to get to zeros. And Eddie, they almost got it. They almost got there. They're about 30 seconds too late. If that game was a 19-minute second half instead of a 20-minute half, they would have just gotten it off. But that last minute's what did it.
Yeah, and then Obagi had other plans. Makes a close range jump shot.
He's a great player.
Yes, he's Ochai Obagi. Makes a huge jumper there to seal it there with 5 seconds left, and then of course Casey.
And you knew it was going in. Coming, come on.
Yeah,
he knew. You had the ball down one, you do it. They're not missing that shot.
Once K-State missed, KU's going to go on the other end, hit it, and then, game over from there. Yeah, so, and we've gone, over 10 minutes into this episode. We haven't even mentioned the game that Nigel Pack had.
Yes.
Overshadowed Nigel Pack. He's went, a.k.a. Jacob Poland on him.
Jacob Poland.
35 points, 12 of 18 from the field. Let's see, from the three-point line here. Let me tab over to my other screen here. Oh, let's see if it'll let me scroll down here. Now it will. Nigel Pack, 8 of 12 from three-point land. He was outstanding. 35 points in this game. And Marquise Noah at 16. Selton Miguel, which we'll talk about him in a little momentarily. 11 points, but you score 35 and you still lose by 3. Yeah, that's saying something right there. missed opportunity, missed there. And we talked about it on last week's show there that out of the two games, KU was the best chance possibly to win, at least split. But instead, you come out of this 0-2. Looking at down to bear at the Big 12 SEC Challenge next. And you mentioned Ole Miss, but there's a glaring rebounding stat that Fitz tweeted that I commented on that recap edition show earlier this week. And he tweeted that there was a KU, obviously, with a disadvantage in the, advantage, I should say, on the rebounds, like a 42-25. Something like that.
25-23.
Yeah, close. Very close. But yeah.
They pretty much doubled K-State.
Yeah. Now is a key factor in the game. I mean, we can't allow a team second chance opportunities. I mean, you had to make at least counter what KU was doing in the second half to withstand that. And K-State, with every short whistle, it seemed like every two minutes whistle. You just gave KU that confidence. And there's a sequence late in that second half where K-State could not get the rebound, and KU was just teeing up three after three, and they weren't going in. Wide open. They weren't even guarding the three-point line, and KU wasn't hitting.
It was legitimately comical. That one session.
Yeah, so KU with the win, another blown lead, kind of the campaign of the men's basketball team this year, 78-75 in that one. And then you turn around a couple of nights ago, and I had a fever, so I was not feeling good, and I turned on the basketball game. Well, I shouldn't have turned it on because this made me even more sick of you to watch it. This was like an out of boring experience there. Obviously, you're playing the defending champs, and you don't really show up to that game either. Alex, you pretty much said it right there. You don't show up there as K-State here. Let's see. Yeah, K-State drops to Baylor 74-49 in that one. There, Nigel Pack coming off that big-time performance, only had 13 points in this game. There, but the big story coming out of here, Selton Miguel's injured. He injured himself. He got hurt in the second half of this game. And I'm still reading details on that. So, Alex, that's kind of what here. Just after. So, last week, 2-0, K-State, two top 25 wins, right? Flip it around. This week, 0-2, missed opportunity against KU at home. And shout out to kudos to the student section. That's the loudest. I know I watched it from a TV screen, but I think that's the loudest I've heard that in quite a while at Bramlage. Even though, yes, it wasn't packed. Yes, it wasn't the stadium, the arena was not filled, but the student section were in the game, and K-State couldn't deliver. So, kudos to the students who made sacrifices to that game and did not get rewarded for that upset win. That's just a shame there. So, just wanted to call out the student section there. And then, I don't know what else you wanted to add, Alex, on that. But, yeah, 0-2, and you have Ole Miss next on Saturday.
Man, there's so much you could add. You know, I could add and go on about, first off, just quickly with the crowd. I'll echo what you said. Great showing by students. You know, they came out and they packed Bramlage, and it actually sounded like Bramlage for the first time. And I can't even tell you how long. Probably the years of Dean Barry Camp, the year they won the Big 12. I mean, I don't think that we've heard it like that since then. Maybe the KU game the next year, but man, missed Bramlage. I think here's the thing that some of the younger fans might understand, and probably most fans listening to this would know, but I used to do Bramlage every night. I mean, that was Bramlage every night. Every night.
That's
what Bramlage was. And as you mentioned, it still was in full. Like, when we went to school there, when I went to school there, Bramlage packed for every Big 12 game. Bramlage packed for every single Big 12 game. And they couldn't even get a full for KU. So, I don't know. I think this just gets back to there being just some fans that, and maybe season ticket holders in particular, dug those heels in. Not a Bruce supporter. I'm not going to show up. I'm not going to watch it. You know, I've got my tickets. And I'm going to keep them, but I'm not going to go watch the Bruce. I want my time, my money, and I'm just going to stay home. And I think there's some fans out there like that. So I think that's just kind of a reality of the situation. But getting onto the basketball court, and you also mentioned kudos to the students for being loud as well. And they did not lack some colorful chants out there. they got colorful, but... But anyway, they on the court, first off, as you mentioned, just a bummer that they lose the game, and it takes just a shine off of an amazing game that Nigel Pack had. You're right, we saw Nigel Pack go Jacob Pullen. We saw Nigel Pack go Jacob Pullen in 2010 on KU. And, where Jacob Pullen dropped 38 on Big Monday. Nigel comes out, drops 35, 8 of 12 from 3, 12 of 18 from the field. Perfect just free throw line. And he did what he could. He had one of those special moments, one of those special games, and he did it against that team in red and blue. And he's able to take advantage of it. So that really is a tough pill to swallow. It really is. As you mentioned, great start. You know, the Cats came out on fire. 50 points at halftime. Holy, sometimes they get 50 in a game. Well, they didn't even get 50 in a Baylor game. You know, so, I mean.
No.
You know, look, offense can be hard to come by on a Bruce Overton team.
fact you get 50 in the first half against KU, just holy smokes, and the way they shot the ball. So like I said, you knew that was not sustainable. You knew that K-State could not stay that time of offense, but you, and you knew KU was going to go on a run, as you mentioned. You just hoped that, that K-State could weather it when they weren't hitting shots, because you knew they were going to pull off. Or there's no way they'll shoot that way in the second half. And they did. They came back down to earth. They scored 25 points. And so, you know, I think that it came down to a couple things. The first thing I think it came down, well, I think it came down to really probably three things. One, the officiating was horrid. And I'm not blaming the game officials. No. Not here blaming the game officials. This game's on K-State. Yeah, this game's on K-State. So don't get twisted. Not going there. They just weren't good, period. They were just bad. Bad officiating. KU got home cooking and Bramlage. Golly, with those officials. And look, KU was more physical than K-State. I don't think there's much denying that. When you look at the spread, you know, they get 30 free throws to K-State's 18 free throws. You know, they go to the line, you know, they double the amount of attempts to the line in the second half by comparison to K-State. That's wonky, man. That's wonky. That's the wonky stuff. K-State commits 24 fouls. KU commits 14 fouls. I mean, look, it just wasn't a very evenly called game. The officials aren't. That's still not why K-State lost this game. Officiating was horrible, but it's not why K-State lost this game. K-State lost this game for a couple of reasons. I will save the rebounding for a minute to go off in a minute. But I'll look to the last 3 minutes of the game. I mean, K-State, with 3 minutes left in this game, K-State had, I just had it up here with the play-by-play. Here we go. So in the second half, with about 3 minutes left, K-State was up by about six. They were up by about six. I had a jumper to put them up 75-69, so you're up six. Yeah, that was the moment. K-State's up 75-69 with 3 minutes left. So you got a six-point lead, Eddie. 3 minutes left. Can you hold on? As I mentioned to you, can you find a way to hold on to it? KU had been throwing punches. They got back into the game. But K-State wasn't letting them fully get that lead. And that gap kind of got closer to closing, but K-State was still keeping from taking the lead. After Nigel Pack hits a jumper with 3:09 left in the game, K-State doesn't score again. No score again. They didn't score in the last 3 minutes, 9 seconds of the game. How are you supposed to win a tight game with KU if you don't score the basketball? Because the other reason they didn't score the basketball, I think number one, they got a little too patient on offense, where they were just kind of draining the clock and weren't necessarily running their offense the way they should have been. And what it led to was a couple shots I don't think you want. You had Nigel Pack shoot 2 threes? I don't think you want Nigel Pack shooting 2 threes. In the last 3 minutes of a tight game against KU, not Nigel Pack, sorry, Selton Miguel. I don't even want Selton Miguel shooting 2 threes in the last 3 minutes of a game.
They're way off.
You don't want the ball in his hands. You want the ball in Nigel Pack's hands. Nigel Pack's got 35 points. I mean, find a way to get him touches. You know, Mark Smith's got a good look.
He didn't hit it.
He only had 2 points in the game. It clearly wasn't his game. But I didn't have a problem with that. We've seen Mark Smith hit that shot before.
Yeah, he was
open.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with that. Now one of the threes that Selton got. I mean, one of them was an open look. I mean, one of them he was wide open. And so I didn't necessarily have a problem with him shooting it. But the problem was. KU wanted him to shoot that.
Yeah, they left him all alone.
Yeah, that's what they wanted. And so you're playing right into their hand. And so the offensive execution, the moral of the story, was horrible in the last 3 minutes, 9 seconds. K-State can't score the rest of the game. And lo and behold, KU hits Ojibaji. It's a game winner. Put up one there with 30 seconds. Nigel comes down. He tries to hit a three there to win it. He doesn't win it. K-State fouls in half.
joke right now. It's like it almost felt like they were screwing with K-State just for the hell of it. And you mentioned it. It didn't even look like K-State was trying to defend or rebound. They were just standing there. They were just standing. Daniel Bradford was standing at the top of the block. He wasn't even trying to move anyway, any one direction. And I was just like, oh my gosh, good grief. If I was Bruce Weber, I don't even know what to do right now. If I would lose a gasket on him on that one possession. I was just pathetic. At K-State, I tweeted it, Eddie. And I tweeted it, but it was pathetic. It was embarrassing. It was utterly embarrassing. And here's the thing. K-State did not rebound the ball well in the first half. But it got covered up by good shooting.
Yeah, it got covered up. Yeah.
That shooting goes away, and all of a sudden that rebounding gets covered up. KU gets, what, 19 points off of second chance points in that game? 19 second chance points off of eight offensive rebounds? Ridiculous. I mean, just completely, completely ridiculous. And you know what? When you've got statistics like that, you're out rebounded 45-23. You give up 18 offensive rebounds. 18 offensive rebounds, Eddie. You've got to be kidding me. You're not going to win. Are you kidding? Here it is. No. No way. No way on earth. And here's the thing. KU turned the ball over 11 times. K-State only turned it over 6 times. K-State took care of basketball. And they forced some turnovers. Kudos to them. They did what we said they needed to do. They needed to win the turnover battle. They did. But they couldn't rebound the basketball. And it put them in a position where KU was able to get 19 second chance points off of those 18 offensive rebounds. And you lose by 3. So rebounding lost them the game. Their offensive execution last 3 minutes lost them the game. Really a bummer because K-State came out and played really well for a good chunk of that game. And so to see it just flip, to see such a good opportunity slip through their fingers like that. Oh, it's just painful. And you heard him on the broadcast, you know, saying that, oh, if K-State wins this game, I mean, they could be moved from the next 4 out to the first 4 out. I mean, it would have been a great opportunity for K-State to get right on that bubble. But instead, you lose that game. You're not firmly on the bubble. You go to Baylor. You get blown out there. And now, you know, now here you are now. The Baylor game, I don't think there's much to say there. You know, I knew that they'd get their rears beat, and they did get their rears beat. They didn't come out with the same energy or intensity. Didn't think that they would. It's going to be hard to match it after you pour everything you did into that KU game. That was an emotional game. They clearly poured everything they had into it. Didn't work out. It's going to be tough to get up to the next one. And so you saw it was really the first Big 12 game, Eddie, where I just saw K-State just look flat all game. They just looked flat. They looked like they didn't have a lot of energy. And they just made a ton of mistakes. Oh my gosh, throwing the ball to Baylor, shooting the ball like crud. The defense was bad. The rebounding was horrible. You mentioned it. Bruce decides to start all smalls because that's what you do against Baylor.
That's what you're not supposed to do against Baylor. Why are you going to start all smalls?
That's what you're supposed to do against Baylor. No,
don't do that. Right. Don't do that.
No. You're saying, oh, it's shocker. Baylor gets all the rebounds, and K-State's got to call timeout because they get down like 9-3 or 11-3 or whatever the score is because K-State can't get a rebound because they have all smalls support against Baylor, which literally got big for days. Not much to say there. Selton injury sucks. You know, see him go down, hurt his ankle like that. You know, solid play, ugly play. He couldn't put any weight on it. I don't know how bad it is, but I have a feeling we won't be seeing it for a while, unless there's an update out there that I haven't seen, which maybe there is. But moral of the story, just a bad game. It's a bad game. So, you know, K-State, Eddie, they've got to just forget it. You know, they've got to find a way to flush these games and get ready for Ole Miss because you got to beat them. You've got to beat them. You know, they're 10-10 on the season. We get into this a little bit more here in the podcast, but 10-10 on the season, 2-6 in the SEC. The good news for K-State is there's no bad losses in the Big 12. Every team is in the top, as you already know, in the top. Top 80 in the net, like top 60 in KenPom rankings, and so all the wins are good wins. No losses are a bad loss, which is good for K-State, but this is a game where Ole Miss is not on the same level as these Big 12 teams that K-State's playing. No offense, Ole Miss, but they're not as good as any of the 10 teams in the Big 12. K-State needs to go on the road and get a win. It's a road win. You can add it to the resume, and it's a game that you need to win. You're the better basketball team. Go out and show it. And if you can get that win, you've got a couple winnable-ish, get as winnable games as you will get in the Big 12 coming up after that, because they will come home to play Oklahoma State. And then they'll go on the road to play TCU. So they've got a couple games that they can get if they can get right. But you've got to be Ole Miss. And you've got to win that game on the road if you want a chance to accomplish what they can accomplish. And I think what's so frustrating, Eddie, is this team's capable of it. That's what's frustrating to me. You lose by single digits to Arkansas. You lose by single digits to Illinois. You lose by 1 point to Marquette, who is now ranked 22nd in the country. You blow a 17-point lead on the road against West Virginia. You lose by two to an Oklahoma team. You blow a game against TCU, who is now actually putting a really nice season together and is 13-4. And you go on the road and you beat Texas. You beat Texas Tech. And you didn't just beat Texas Tech. You beat Texas Tech by 12. And Texas Tech is sitting damn near top 10. Now, and you just about beat KU. Like, this team is capable. They're tournament. They've got tournament-level talent. They just need to put it together and get some wins and win some games and not lose them at the end. And you've got to go to Ole Miss. You've got to get a win there to be able to put yourself in a position to try to steal some games. They've given away too many games. You've got to stop giving them away.
Yep, that's right. That's right. We're going to step aside for a quick moment.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 84 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. Alex and Eddie Greer. Almost recovered from a high fever the last couple of days on the podcast here. Talking men's basketball. And I do have some breaking news that I will share in a little bit here that I came across while you were Oxford's going over that, so that'll be a good transition when we talk about what we saw in the original round. But back to Baylor game, just to kind of put the bow on the Baylor game, obviously, 74-49. Yeah, K-State, they scored 50 against KU in the first half by themselves. You only get to 49 against Baylor the entire game. So, field goal-wise, K-State didn't shoot it well. Only 31% from the field, while Baylor over almost 57%, pretty much, if you round that up. Three-point line, K-State horrible, 21%. Turnovers, 15-12 in favor of Baylor. But the rebounding, huge issue. 39-28, Baylor. Touch that free throw line. Baylor 9 of 14. K-State 6 of 13, which added up to 46% from the charity strike, while Baylor shot 64. Their total rebounds 39-28. Baylor assists. Baylor 21-8 in assists. Steals 7-6. Blocks. K-State nothing. Baylor 6. So yeah, I can go down the line on the list right there. But yeah, issue right now for the team rebounding, and I don't understand why are going to start small when you just added the compounding of your problem. Yeah. But why you start small when the previous game you had trouble rebounding basketball? I don't understand that. Why just go small? Let's see what they do. Other Big 12 teams don't do that. Do not do that. Big mistake there on Bruce Weber's part, or really the coaching staff, whoever came up with that lame game plan. Let's go small. But Baylor, you the size already has the size advantage on you. So let's just add our more difficulty, but playing all our small guys. And yeah, so yeah, the score tells it all. 74-49. Alex, you already mentioned it. Next is the Big 12 SEC Challenge Saturday. Ole Miss. Yeah, you gotta get this one. You're gonna have no Sel Miguel. So again, like we always say on this podcast, when it comes down to other guys go down. Somebody has to step up and make plays off the bench. Whether that's, let's see if I can go back to my other tab. So
I'll say it. I'm definitely not jumping in here. I'll just put it in. I think Michael Girl's got to step up. You know, hey, Sultan's down. You're the super senior. It's time to show up. Team needs you. Time to show up off the bench. He's been a sixth man, and I think it's time for him to step up and take that role on. I mean, that's just my opinion.
I was actually about to say him, so you kind of read my mind.
Yeah.
When it comes to that. Yeah, Mike McGurl in the Baylor game, 27 minutes, 6 points, 0-4 from downtown.
He's been kind of underwhelming this year, to be honest.
Yeah, and I thought he would take – I thought him coming back would be somewhat of a would be an advantage for some of these guys,
yeah.
Especially the freshman class like Miguel, Pack, and Bradford. But we've already seen Bradford early on seen him take a step back. He's been inconsistent this year. Some of these other guys, yeah, McGurl, he's been kind of a – he's set himself back a little bit this year, for sure.
I will say quickly, though, you know, Eddie, I mean, I think Miguel's taking a step forward. I think he's a better offensive player than he was last year. I think he's one of the best defenders in the conference. I mean, I think Miguel is in a nice place. Sel Miguel, he's never going to be that offensive juggernaut. I think he's a respectable offensive player now. Last year, he couldn't do hardly anything on offense. And Nigel Pack is doing what Nigel Pack does. And so the guards are there. It's just kind of a underwhelming that you couldn't get that. You're just not getting that Mike McGurl moment, the moments that you got from him last year. You saw the splashes of it. Just kind of a bummer not seeing it. But you know what? Still a lot of season left, Eddie. A lot of season left. He's super senior. He's been there. He's done that. So who knows? Maybe he'll show out here in the FM games.
That's what you hope for. If you're a Bruce Weber or a K-State fan who listens to this podcast, that's what you hope for. Mark Smith, who only scored 6 points against Baylor the other night, and kind of have an off game against KUS. Well, they need him. The Mark Smith that showed up against Oklahoma, the guy that showed up against Texas, they need that guy to come out as well.
100%.
The inconsistent Ishma should. He only had 3 points against Baylor on Tuesday night as well.
He
scored first points of the game. I thought, I'm like, okay, here we go. I thought he could have something going here, but nope. So, yeah, it's going to be a guessing game. Who's going to step up in the absence of Miguel? We'll have to find out. We're going to find that out on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock Central Time. Is that? We go to Ole Miss, right? Or is that in Bramlage? I don't have a schedule.
We're going to Ole Miss. We're going to Ole Miss. It's an opportunity, Eddie, for K-State to go get a road win against a Power 5 team. I think that's another reason why it's such a big game. You know, you go on the road and you got a chance to snag one against a Power 5 team there. It's a game you could win, but you can get that win. That gives you wins in Nebraska, gives you a win at Ole Miss, gives you a win against Wichita State, Wichita. I mean, it gives you some stuff that could bolster that resume a little bit if you can scratch away enough Big 12 games.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Kind of put a bowl in men's basketball here, and they pick up right.
I do want to say one other thing, Eddie, quickly before we transition to basketball. You mentioned Davion Bradford.
Yeah, yep.
Really underwhelmed with him and his lack of development and progression. I understand that he had a slow start, but he is just so soft down low, so tentative. He looks like he's playing at half speed, and I don't know what's up with him. I know Bruce said that he got hurt before the Baylor game. It was kind of a
step behind. He's looked a step behind all year. He really has, and I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if he's still having lingering effects from the pneumonia that he had, here at the beginning of the season, but just slow. He just seems slower, Eddie. He seems softer. He doesn't go up strong with anything. His shots get blocked. He misses layups because he's not going up. He's just not going up strong. I think he's missed some dunks. He's not getting rebounds. It's really underwhelming and really disappointing. Kind of just seeing what we're seeing with him compared to what we saw last year. And Ezeagu did a nice job kind of covering up for a while, but Ezeagu just, look, he's a good backup big man. That's what he is. And so, it's killing him. And it's just killing them that they're not getting production from their front court. They're getting enough from their back court. I think that they're getting enough from the backcourt with Noel. With Noel, they got a nice 1-2 punch. If you get anything from the front court, it makes their life so much easier. Just really a bummer that the K-State can't get it. To be honest, I'm kind of at the point where I'm not even banking on it anymore from Davion. I think that for this team to move forward, you're going to have to rely on Mark Smith getting on. You're going to have to rely on that backcourt of Noel and Pat getting on. And then guys off the bench, like Monroe getting on. I think you're going to have to. I think that lends you to going smaller. I know that we talked about going small, but I'm not necessarily five guards / forwards small. Not that small. Not Ish Masood, your five small. We don't need to go that small. I get the thought of going small. You're playing to your strength, but you've got to have somebody out there. But just a bummer. You mentioned Davion. That's what made me think about it. And that's been the biggest disappointment for me. It's just that he's just been so soft. And just the front court in general. They just need, I don't even say a lot of production. Just give them something. Just give them something. And don't put all the weight on this backcourt and on Mark Smith there at three.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely would agree with you on that. Yeah, pretty much picked up where we left off last year with the standings. K-State, where you find K-State, y'all? At the bottom of the conference. Shotgun pretty much down there. Above them, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Oklahoma, and TCU. But TCU's in the top half, so it's Oklahoma, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and K-State right there. Back at the bottom where we're at.
West Virginia is ninth. How wild is that?
Yeah, that's crazy. That is crazy. West Virginia, 2-5, man. But when you look at their overall record, it's okay. It's 13-6. But you still have every Big 12 team at least over 500 for time being. When I say that, I'm talking about K-State, 10-9. Now, with an important game coming up on Saturday, so I agree with you on that. I like what you're thinking there. I think they're gonna have to rely on Pat, Marquise Noel, and Mark Smith, and hopeful you get something. I don't care who it is up in the front court at this point. You want some production up there, otherwise. You want that well balanced attack. Well, K-State is on the one side right now, trying to cover up for the big man, or a lack thereof big man, on his team. So
I think we know they'll be shopping for this offseason.
They need some guys who can rebound and score the basketball. It feels like we've been talking about that for the last 10 years, somewhat.
I was just saying, since I was in college, that's been the talk. I'm gonna find someone to score. They have one good year of scoring where they had, what was it? It was Bruce's first year. It was Bruce's first year when they won the Big 12. Where they had Roddy Magruder, Shane Southwell, Gibb, Spradling. That team could score. That team could score the basketball. But once those guys left, when you have Marcus, you kind of had that Jacob Pullen thing a little bit too. you know, you have Marcus and Wes, so they do a little scoring too, but even after that second year, it just feels like scoring's been a grind. Even when you had Barry, Cam, and Dean, they still weren't a very explosive offensive team. They were more of a defensive, we're going to grind it out, win in the 60s, you know, win in the 50s. That's just how they won games.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
We're going to talk about women's basketball here. How to set the stage for this weekend and then part of next week with K-State Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 84. The track team will be going to Lubbock, or if they're not there already, start one of their first Big 12 meets, if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow morning. The Texas Tech Open in Multis. They'll begin a two-day meet down there. Tomorrow it'll end Saturday afternoon. So Cliff Reddo's teams will be on the prowl there looking for some more early season success. And then on Saturday afternoon, we talked about it already, K-State trying to get back their winning ways and stay out of the 10-10 situation, as they'll be going on the road to take on Ole Miss, part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. K-State needs to do their part and not be part of losing factor in that. Then in prime time on Saturday, K-State hosting TCU 6-3 tip here in Bramlage Coliseum, as K-State looks to continue their trajectory to the NCAA tournament. More on that here in a second. And then, of course, on next Wednesday, the anticipated rematch on the women's side, as K-State goes to Ames, the women's team, take on Iowa State in round number two of that battle there, which lately, and I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on this on the weekly edition, that for whatever reason, K-State-Iowa State goes right down in the final possession, so looking forward to see how they bounce back there. And speaking of which, K-State women's team, Jeff Mitty, every time they've been ranked this year, which has been twice, three times now, they're on 3 when ranked 25th in the country, as they lose to Texas 66-48 off the historic performance by Aoka Lee last weekend against Oklahoma, which, oh, by the way, Oklahoma was ranked 14th in the country there. Aoka did have another double-double in this game, 20-11, and had a steal in this game. And when I mention some breaking news, well, actually, there is another one there. So, well, the NCAA seeding came out. This is the first breaking news that I wanted to bring up. Well, K-State checks in at number 16 for, it was the, apparently it was a seed reveal for the women's side of the bracket for March Madness, of course, and K-State 15-5 there. So it has improved from last year, obviously. it's been quite the transition this year from a year ago. So this was the first reveal, actually, as I'm looking over some of the articles here at the same time. So yeah, this just came in about an hour ago.
That Eddie would put them at a 4 seed, right? And they were in the top 16.
That should be accurate, I think.
Because I know that they had them as a 5 seed on ESPN's Bracketology. So if they had them at 16th, that would put them as the last 4 seed. So they would be right now. They're hovering there, one of the last 4 seed spots, one of the first 5 seed spots. Not too shabby.
That's not bad at all. That is not bad at all. So while K-State men's team trending down, K-State women's trending in the right direction here. And yeah, that's pretty much accurate there. You're looking at if K-State can continue their success. I know they lost to Texas last night, as we recorded this podcast on Thursday. January 27, 2022, they continue this trajectory of winning majority of the games and losing here and there, yeah, they're gonna be right there, fourth or fifth seed. So that's pretty damn good from a year ago there as well. And obviously, we have Ayoka Lee, one of the best players in college basketball. Who is college basketball? Yeah, I said it. I said it a few more times this week already.
I'm here for it, dude. I'm here for it.
Yep. And then you have the, I love this trio. We've already talked about, the men's supposed to be trio of Davion Bradford, Miguel, and Pack. This trio, we better be paying attention to this trio. Serena Sundell and the Glenn sisters, Bradley and Jaylen. So they're going to be here for a while. And the return of Ayoka Lee just strengthens that team up back again next year. I don't want to look too far ahead. The excitement already. But just looking at this year alone, they can continue to build on what they've been doing. They're going to be a force now. Obviously, that loss last night dropped K-State to fifth behind Baylor for I don't know why. The only reason why, probably because Baylor has a better conference record by one.
Yeah, the percentage points. Mm-hmm.
By the stupid percentage points, but whatever. So, but yeah, I mean, trending in the right direction, obviously. Alex, you named off earlier in this episode her numbers. Serena Sundell, I'm going to read off her numbers here for you. She's already a three-time Big 12 Freshman of the Week selection. Second in the Big 12 in assists. In assists per game at almost averaging 6 a game. She has 177 total after the Texas game. You're looking at her as a possible Big 12 Freshman of the Year candidate and pacing the Big 12 in assists with 7. And then, I'll even take it a step further than that. Briley Glenn, a two-time Big 12 Freshman of the Week honoree. She's averaging 7 points per game and averaging just underneath 3 rebounds. Her sister, Jake Lynn, who just collected her first Big 12 Freshman of the Week honor this week. She's averaging the same amount of points as her sister, Briley, with 7, 4 rebounds a game, 2 assists, and almost 2 steals a game. So, there you go.
There you go. I like it.
So that's kind of one of the breaking news right there. So, K-State checking in at 16th. They're the top seed, top 16 seed, actually, I should say, as it comes. If it were March right now, yeah, you're looking at this team being a 4th and 5th seed, but you can always improve on that mark. So, we'll see what happens there, but again, like the men, the women, at least the top half of the standings, Alex, you got Iowa State, Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor, and K-State. So, they're going to be beating each other up here, and it's going to be to see who's going to come out on top as conference champs when the end of February rolls around.
It will be. And you've got a lot of... some intriguing games that could go a long way in determining that. You mentioned that K-State, has the rematch with Iowa State coming up here on Wednesday. They've also got a game in Waco against Baylor a week later, a team that they were able to beat in Manhattan. And they've got Oklahoma and Texas there on the last week of February. So, I mean, they've definitely got some big games that will go a long way in determining who wins the Big 12 Conference. We kind of saw the swings, I guess you could say, of kind of what this race will look like. K-State comes out and they beat Oklahoma by 30 points, 29 to be exact, but win by nearly 30 points. And that was an Oklahoma team of 16-2. They were 16-2 on the season. They were ranked 14th in the country, and K-State beat them by 30. Just wild. Let Ayoka Lee, as we already know, she goes off for 61 in that game, as we talked about, which is just incredible. By the way, loved watching Scott Van Pelt on Sunday night and watching them analyze the Chiefs-Bills game and then go from that highlight to Ayoka Lee
setting the NCAA record. Beautiful. Beautiful to see. Beautiful to see. But yeah, you know, so you saw that, and then you see, you're like, oh, well, now, you know, KC's going to go on the road against number 9 Texas. We'll see what they can do there. Turns out they can't do much. they can't do much against Texas. They get down early. They're down 8 after 1. And then they're down double figures going into the locker room, and they just never were able to come back. Texas outscored them 3-4 quarters. The only quarter that K-State won was the third, and they only outscored them by 1. So it just wasn't their night. They would believe they had 20 points in that game, but it just wasn't K-State's night. It was that game by 18 points to Texas. But look, you know, Texas is a good team. You know, you bounce back. You've got a game coming up against TCU, and you gotta win it. I mean, that's a TCU team that's 6 wins on the year, Eddie. They're 6-10 overall. They're 6-10 overall. They're 2-5 in Big 12 play. You gotta win that game. You gotta win that game, Braylon. You can't let that game slip when you've got Iowa State, Oklahoma, Texas, and Baylor, who you're kind of banging around with. They're all within one game of first place. So you've got to find a way to beat TCU at home. By the way, hopefully the fans come out and support them the way they did against KU this last week. But you got to find a way to get that game. You know, you got to find a way to get that game. And then you go to Iowa State, and then you're going to come home after Iowa State, and you're going to play Texas Tech, who's got 9 wins this season. And it's 2-6 in conference. But you got to find a way to get that game too, especially since you dropped the one against Tech on the road earlier in the season. So, you know, those are the games that K-State's going to need to get if they want to have a chance to compete for a Big 12 title. The good news is, Eddie, pretty much every time K-State takes the floor, they're going to have the best player on the court. So that's a good thing. That makes your life a little easier knowing that you've got the best player on the court. And so there's only so much teams can do to slow Ayoka Lee down. So, you know, for K-State, I really just think it comes down to execution. You know, you come out, you want to execute your game plan. And if you do that, you're going to have a shot. You're going to have a chance. You know, it seems like they've been struggling more with the road. You know, with the 18-point loss against Texas on the road, the 19-point loss against Texas Tech on the road, you know, the loss on the road to South Carolina, although not hold that against them, same with NC State, also not going to hold that against them, but they've only got one loss at home in the entire season, and that is that heart-wrenching loss against Iowa State that they dropped there, 73-70, when they were ranked 9th in the country. So, K-State needs to continue to protect that home court. They got to continue to protect that home court because they don't play their best ball on the road. So, you know, you go out, you find a way to beat TCU, you go to U of Ames and see if you can pull an upset. You know, that's what you do. You know, this K-State seems to not get a ton of respect. 25th in the country, that's way too low a ranking, but as you mentioned, Eddie, they can't win when they're ranked, so maybe it's better that they're not ranked.
I think they're better off. Yeah, I think they're got lost in there for a minute. I'm sure you come back on here in a second, but yeah, just kind of pissing off like that. Yeah, I think they're better off without being ranked, but saying that. They go to TCU obviously he'll call back in here momentarily here on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Eddie Greer here, along with Alex Aiden, who just went offline here for a quick second here as I'm getting him back on the line here. Yeah, K-State, I think they're better without ranked, but at the same time, they should be. But every time they're ranked, they lose. So, TCU. Yeah, I agree with them wholeheartedly. Yeah, you got to get those games where you fail to go on the road and you lose a doozer against Texas Tech. You can't let it happen. Good teams take care of bad teams. So you want to be a good team, you got to take. I mean, we said this over and over on this weekly edition of the podcast, the Pro Project Podcast. You got to take care of who you're supposed to be. And somewhere down the line, be the teams that you're not supposed to be. So That's where I draw a line at with that, with this team this year. Still a lot of ball, and the way this thing's going out, it's going to be at least come the women in this conference, top five team I just read off 5 minutes ago, who makes the least mistakes is going to win this conference.
You know, Eddie, by the way, you can you hear me now?
I'm good. Yes, I hear you.
Good.
Yeah.
You gotta love the technical difficulties. It's been a while since we've had something like that happen.
Yep, it's been a while. It's been a while since we had that.
We had a good run. We had a good run, and then it reared its head again.
Streak broken.
Streak is broken. But you know that you gotta take care of what you can take care of. You gotta beat teams you're supposed to beat. And for the most part, K-State's done a good job of that. You know, they've done a good job of that. Really, the one hiccup was that Texas Tech game on the road after Iowa State. You know, you can't let that type of thing happen again. You're going to have clunkers. They're going to happen. But can't lose by 19 on the road to a team that's 2-6 in conference play. That's a tough pill. That's a tough pill to swallow, especially when you're kind of in a race there. At the top half of the conference, so you just got to be a little bit better there. But you know, if they can take care of TCU at home, you know, like I said, they're in a good position to go. And as I was saying before the call cut out, you know, I was talking about them being ranked, not performing very well when they're ranked, and you know, so maybe it's better if they don't get ranked. But ultimately, I don't know. I don't know why they're 25th. They're better than that. They've got the best player. I agree with you. Best player in college basketball on their team. I think it'll work out. But all in all, Eddie, you've got to be happy with where they sit. When you look at last year, this team finished last in the Big 12. Found ways to give games away more times than I can count, and we were not happy. We were talking about wasting Aoki's talent. We were talking about Jeff Mitty being on the hot seat. We were talking about a lot of things. And winning cures all. Here they are. They're winning, and we haven't talked about Jeff Mitty.
Not one bit.
Not one bit at all. We're not talking about them not putting talent around Aoki Lee. We're not talking about them choking games. Like I said, they're coming off an 18-point loss. You never want to lose a game by 18 points, but... But look, you know, I'll give you a little leeway when you beat Oklahoma by 30 the game before. The game before.
I give you
and
that.
And Oklahoma goes for 61. So I'm with you. I think the arrow is still trending up for them. I think they got the green arrow going up right now. It looks a good conference. There's good basketball teams in it. Iowa State is currently sitting there at number 13. Oklahoma is currently sitting there at number 18. You look at Texas, they're number 9. Baylor is number 11. I mean, you know, K-State's at 25. I mean, there's a good team, man. It's a good conference. It's a good conference. A lot of good challenges for K-State. So it's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be tough for them. But you've got to be happy with the way that this basketball team is trending. You already mentioned next year. It could be a really, really special year next year if things break right. But it could be a special year this year if things break right for them. So hopefully they can continue to take care of business and get some wins and, you know, keep that arrow pointing up.
Yeah, and also to add that, the ever-quiet Emily Ebert is a junior this year, so she'll be a senior next year. So they're going to have their starting five. I had to do a double take on her to make sure she wasn't a senior yet. But, yeah, so you're going to have all five of your starters. My voice is starting to give out here. You're going to have all five of your starters back next year. So no matter how the season ends, you're going to be pretty damn good next year. And I don't know the recruiting class Jeff Mitty's got going for next year. But at that, yeah. So, but final to put a bow on Texas real quick, and before we transition to the last part of the podcast here, Serena Sundell, double S, 13 points, 4 steals, 4 assists for her as well. She was the only one, along with Aoki Lee, who scored in double digits in that as well. The other breaking news, switching gears now to football, Skylar Thompson, 15 minutes ago, tweeted out in a letter saying that he's going to attempt going to the NFL draft, Alex. Skylar Thompson, our guy, going to go for try to get himself into the NFL draft. Kind of your quick thoughts on that.
Well, clearly, my cat must have gotten excited, Eddie, because she's under the covers of my bed. And outside of my office, right, little where my desk is and stuff. And right when you said that, I see her. She's burrowed under the covers, and she just got up. There's a big lump in the covers now. She's excited. She's celebrating Skylar Thompson making his NFL run. No, you look, this is what I thought he would do that. I think he's got the talent. I heard that all year. I heard that from scouts. I heard that from not scouts telling me personally, but I mean I had heard scouts talking to other Key State reporters about how Skylar could have potential of being drafted maybe late or getting an undrafted free agency pickup or something like that, and that he could be a good backup in the league. And so I'm glad to see Skylar go after that. First off, Eddie, I'm glad that Skylar was able to close. I've said this before. I'm glad he was able to close that chapter the way that it should be closed. He was able to close on his terms. It wasn't closed on someone else's terms. And things ended on such a high note for him here at K-State. So now he can go chase that dream of playing in the NFL with a clear mind and content with the way things ended. And so for him, I think Skylar, look, Eddie, it's a thin quarterback class this year. It is a thin quarterback class, as thin as I can remember in a long time for the NFL draft. There's just not a lot of guys out there. So that gives Skylar a shot. I mean, that gives Skylar a shot to shine. And look, am I saying that Skylar's going to be drafted in the top five rounds? No, that's not what I'm saying. It's not what I'm saying. But if Skylar come out and he can have really good workouts in the offseason, he could put him in a position to possibly get drafted. He could. And how great of a story would that be if Skylar could dig through all of this stuff to get drafted? That'd be special. That'd be really, really special. It'd be really special for him, for his family, for the university. And just be a really cool moment. So, good for Skylar for going after it. I'm definitely, eager to, see kind of how that plays out for him. And look, Skylar will get it. He'll get a shot, Eddie. I'm not questioning that. If he doesn't get drafted, some team will pick him up as an undrafted guy. You would have to imagine, and he'll get a shot at getting the quarterback gig. But how cool would it be if he could hear his name called there on the stage there in Vegas? I believe is where it is this year. So that'd be really, really cool. The only thing that'll be cooler, Eddie, is if it were in Kansas City, where he's from, and they could call his name on the NFL draft stage in Kansas City. That's where the draft's going to be next year. It's going to be in Kansas City next year. So it would have been one more year. He would have gotten an opportunity to not just get drafted, but get drafted in Kansas City, his hometown. But still, it would be a really, really cool opportunity for him if he could hear his name called and be able to spend, have that moment with his friends and family. And good for Skylar. And, we'll see how he does throughout the process.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 84 here. Down to the final stretch here of this episode is even recording on January 27, 2022. Coming out as usual day tomorrow, early evening. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast. And now, talking some NFL playoffs. We're in the conference championship weekend, folks. And we're down to four teams left, which include the Chiefs coming off of a tremendous game that was last weekend. All the games in the division round were something else last weekend there. Obviously, the AFC will kick things off first with Cincinnati at Kansas City. 2 o'clock Central kick, 3 o'clock Eastern time there. The rematch of the, I think it was week 16 or week 17, I can't remember. It was one of those two. They were the Bengals.
Week 17.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Where the Bengals outlasted the Chiefs, and that one, the Chiefs looking to get their revenge where it most matters and go back to another appearance in the Super Bowl for a third year in a row. Or will Joe Burrow do the impossible and win? Well, actually, they won their first game at home and then outlasted Tennessee, upset Tennessee, knocked them off to set up the Chiefs. Hosting another AFC Championship game. I believe this is their fourth consecutive one.
It is. First team in NFL history. I do the host 4 championship games in a row.
Yep. So, Chiefs looking to capitalize once again on that. And then, primetime, San Francisco, LA Rams. And
the NFC Championship you all predicted.
Yep.
The 6 seed and the 4 seed. It's how everybody wrote it.
Yeah, that is right. Rams, if they get past the 49ers, we would probably 50-50. I'm going to leave this at 50-50. So I'm going to say the Rams get past the 49ers. Where is the Super Bowl held out this year? L.A.
That's right.
It will be the second year in a row that the host team, host team will have the Super Bowl. So, a little bit of history is on the line here. Rams and 49ers just played each other not too long ago. The 49ers.
Week 18.
Yep, week 18.
We're getting some games we just got like 3-4 weeks ago. Championship.
Yep, 49ers came back from what? Some 21 points down or 18 points down.
Yeah, they're 17-0.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The 49ers just turned on the Jets in the second half, and Rams buckled under pressure. We'll see what happens on Sunday there. But back to the Chiefs. They have played some tremendous games that I've seen all year. Obviously, that overtime thriller that against the Chargers on Thursday Night Football, that was something else. But this was a whole different level of crazy. Some number that in like 2 minutes, total points were scored like 20 or 25 points or something like that. And then, yeah, most craziest thing, of course, Patrick Mahomes, the only person who knew this, 13 days left, Bills fans. And then, obviously, I'm not going to go into the whole overtime deal. I don't have enough time for that. maybe next week.
And I'll say this. Chiefs fans are with you guys. Like, look, we tried to have the rule change, okay? Like, we're here for it. We're here to change the OT rules. If you want to change the OT rules, I'm just saying it now, Eddie. I've heard that so much this week. Oh, it was overtime. Look, you're preaching to the choir. You think we want to risk the opportunity of Patrick Mahomes not touching the ball in overtime? Like, come on. Of course we want him guaranteed to be touched the ball in overtime. Like, anyway, I'm not going to go on that soapbox either. We could do a whole different thing on it. It's just, I think it's so ironic that everyone's like, oh, well, overtime rules. I'm like, I agree. Like, no point to be, though. I mean, I don't make the rules. I'm with you. The Chiefs literally tried to make the rule change. And the NFL said, tough to them. I mean, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Sorry, you continue, Eddie. Continue. I'm off that rant.
Yeah. So, that was the first year that Mahomes made it to the AFC Championship game, the Patriots. Mahomes didn't touch the ball. So fast forward through time to 2022, Josh Allen doesn't touch the ball. And that look, can't get that itch out of my head. It is what it is. But yeah, so Alex, so for Chiefs to winning the AFC again, to get back to another Super Bowl. Obviously, you got the challenge now of Josh Allen just tore up the secondary of the Chiefs last week.
Yep.
Now, you welcome Joe Burrow, who you just faced a few weeks ago, who had a field day, and he and Jamar Chase, something else.
Oh, my golly, yes.
You guys are going to have your hands full, but what are your keys for you guys to have a shot to advance back to the Super Bowl? What needs to happen for you guys to at least slow down this combination of Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase? And not only that, Joe Mixon last week on the ground had himself a good day last week.
Yeah, he's actually a really good back, really underrated back. First off, just quickly, just another fun little nugget for the Chiefs-Bills game. You mentioned obviously the 13 seconds and the Chiefs going down and getting field goal to tie it to go to overtime. Mahomes threw for 188 yards after the 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter. Hey, talk about wild. Threw for 188 yards after the 2-minute warning of the fourth quarter.
That's more than Will Howard.
That's more than Will Howard probably threw in the season. I mean, good grief. This is wild. But with the Bengals, you mentioned the keys to the game. I think it's pretty simple. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. I think it starts there. And the reason I say that is because they did a lot of that against Cincinnati when they played them in Cincy. You know, I saw Kyle Brandt today on Good Morning Football today talking about how, the Chiefs, the scary thing is that they lost to the Bengals, they didn't make any mistakes. And I thought, what in the hell are you talking about? Didn't make any mistake. That was one of their most mistake-filled games. Like, what do you mean they didn't make any mistakes? They committed 10 penalties in that game. Mahomes started well, but they only got 3 points in the second half after getting 28 points in the first half. They had dropped balls. They gave 266 yards to Ja'Marr Chase. And what do you mean that they didn't make mistakes? They made mistakes. I don't know what he was talking about there, but I think it starts with not making mistakes. Don't turn the ball over, and don't commit 10 penalties. Yeah, that's a good starting spot. You know, if you don't do that against the Bengals, you win. Regardless of Ja'Marr Chase going off, and regardless of those things. The other thing for the Chiefs is you've got to, and this is really what I think it boils down to. You've got to defend differently. I think that the Chiefs went in the game in Cincinnati. They tried to do what they do. They like to play a lot of man coverage on the back end, and they like to blitz. Spags likes to blitz and get exotic with some looks. It left. It leaves receivers one-on-one. Corners have got to body up and take receivers on one-on-one. So that's a lot of responsibility for a corner, and that's just kind of the way the Chiefs' defense is built. You get home, and if you don't get home, then the quarterback's likely going to have, some one-on-one opportunities. It did not work against the Cincinnati. They threw some blitzes at him. They didn't really bracket any receivers. They didn't really shift any safeties over for help. They didn't really do anything like that. It was really one-on-one coverage with Ja'Marr Chase all game. And Burrow just threw up 50-50 balls to him all game, and he just caught him and got him. And so you can't do that. You can't do that. So if I'm the Chiefs, Don't blitz. There's no reason for the Chiefs to send more than four guys. The Cincinnati Bengals' offensive line's not very good. I think that's well documented. Joe Burrow got sacked 9 times. Their offensive line's not very good, and the Chiefs got a pretty decent defensive line. They got Melvin Ingram in there. They've got Chris Jones in there. They got Frank Clark in there. They've got Jaron Reed in there. They've got dudes up front. The Chiefs can win. They can win. Up against that Bengals line and get consistent pressure with four. They should be able to. That shouldn't be a problem. So don't blitz. Drop seven. Help those corners out. And whether that means playing some more zone coverage on the back end, whether that means doing a little more bracketing of guys like Ja'Marr Chase, whether that means shifting some safeties over for some help, whatever that looks like, you need to do some things to help your corners out a little bit more so they're not left on an island with guys like Ja'Marr Chase and
they'll blitz. You know, the Chiefs got burned on a 3rd and 27 against the Bengals that they converted because they sent like a zero blitz on 3rd and 27. And I don't know why. I think they wanted to knock them out of field goal range, but they did it. And the Bengals ended up getting a first down and a touchdown. You can't do those types of things in this game. And I don't think that they will. I think Spags was like, learned that game plan doesn't work, and I'm going to throw it out. And so if the Chiefs can just change their defense up, shift some things up, I think that they'll have some more success. Are you going to stop the Bengals offense? No, you're not going to stop the Bengals offense. Jamar Chase is a great receiver. Joe Burrow's a great quarterback. Hell, let's go further than that. They got three great receivers, you know, with Boyd, Higgins, and Chase.
Yeah.
And you throw their tight ends in there. You put Joe Mixon in there, Joe Burrow in there, they got dudes. So they're going to score. Like, you're not going to just stop the Bengals. But the Bengals are going to have, in my opinion, Eddie, another magical day on offense. You know, they scored 26 against the Raiders, I think it was, 19 against the Titans. That's not winning them a game in Arrowhead. They're not winning doing that in Arrowhead. I think they've kicked 8 field goals in the 2 playoff games. You're not winning in Arrowhead doing that. You're just not. The Bengals defense isn't as good. The Bills defense, Eddie, was the number one overall defense in the NFL. The Chiefs just put up 42 points on them. And they put up 42 points the week before on the Steelers. I don't see a scenario where you're going to win scoring 19 and 26 against that team. You're going to have to score over 30 if you want a chance. Maybe even score over 35, just depending on the way the game. They're going to have to get touchdowns, and they're going to have to hit. They're going to have some things break their way. And that game in Cincinnati, that's exactly what happened. They had some things break their way. The Chiefs had multiple opportunities to win that game, despite mistakes that they made. They didn't get it. The Chiefs were kind of taken back by the amount of speed. I don't think that they expected the amount of speed that the Bengals had. Like, that kind of caught them off guard. I don't think it will this time. Some things kind of had to go right for the Bengals in that game. And they did, and they found a way to get the win. I think that they're going to need some of that again. They're going to need some things to break their way. They're going to need to get a turnover. I don't see a way they'll go in there to win if they can't get at least one turnover. And then that was back to the Chiefs, what I said at the beginning, Eddie. Take care of the football. Take care of the football, cut down on penalties. If the Chiefs don't beat themselves, if they're in a good position. If they do beat themselves, the Bengals will make you pay for it, and you may be on the couch watching the Bengals play in the Super Bowl. So, regardless of how it goes, I do think the Chiefs will find a way to get the win. I think they're the better football team. I think the biggest fear is kind of a little bit of a hangover from that crazy game last weekend.
Yeah.
That's probably my biggest fear, but this is a veteran Chiefs. I shouldn't say this is a veteran Chiefs team. This is actually the second youngest playoff team this year, but I mean, they've got veterans that have been there, done that in the playoffs. So I'm not terribly worried about that, but I'm a little concerned about it. But I think that if the Chiefs come out and play their game, they'll be fine. They'll get the win. I think that they will get a win. I do think it'll be a really good game. There's playmakers all over the field.
Yep.
It makes for some fireworks, and I'm eager to see it. I'm just lucky I'm here to see it, because that Bills game about killed me. Good grief. I'm surprised I'm still breathing after that. But look, I will say this: the Bengals are that type of team that they're playing for the swagger. They're playing for the swagger right now, and you can't deny it. Joe Burrow, he's got that swagger. He's got that championship swagger that we actually hear Tyrann Mathieu at Kansas City talk about a lot. If you let your guard down, you'll lose. You'll lose. They will make you pay. They will make you pay. So, the Chiefs can all let their guard down, Eddie. Because while the Bengals may not have as much talent as the Bills do, you will go home, and they will make you pay if you get a little too cute, down here and there, they'll make you pay for it.
Yeah, that is right here. Joe Burrow, first meeting a few weeks ago, threw over 446 yards, 4 touchdown passes. Jamar Chase, 11 catches, 266 yards. 3 of those touchdown passes from Burrow there. Mixon, 12 carries, 46 yards. Mahomes, 2 touchdowns and 259 yards. Darrell Williams carried him on the ground, 88 yards on 14 touches. And then Tyreek Hill, 6 catches for 40 yards. In that one, Travis Kelce had only 5 catches, 25 yards. In that one, in K-State alum Brian Pringle caught a touchdown pass last weekend. 3 catches, 35 yards. And I also got to give a shout out to another K-State former player, Jordan Willis, 49ers, with a huge block that changed the game in Lambeau and helped send the 49ers to the NFC Championship game. How about that? And San Francisco Twitter, their Twitter caught the locker room celebration. Jordan Willis getting the game ball. How about that? Jordan Willis, well done, sir.
Eddie, I gotta say, look at the Case Majors playing plays in the playoffs. You know, you've got Jordan Willis over here who wrecked the game against the Cowboys. And then comes out and blocks the punt. The game winning block really was the game winning punt block.
Yeah, yep.
Against the Packers. And then you turn around, you got Byron Pringle over here who's got 3 touchdowns in 2 games in the Steelers and Bills game. And is really becoming Mahomes' third target behind Hill and Kelce. They're not Hill. No. Hill and Kelce, he's really becoming the third target. I mean, he's become more of the clear target behind those two guys. And so K-Staters are getting some shine and they're gonna be aligned well here in the Final Four of the Final Four. And Eddie, I woke up this morning. I get on Twitter. That's one of them. Sorry, it's just a habit. You know, you wake up, you get on Twitter. Wake up, still in bed, I get on Twitter. The first tweet I see is a Pringles tweet from Pringles, and it's Byron Pringles. The video Byron Pringles saying, oh, I got my Pringles for the game, and it's like, that's where we've come. We've come to the point now where I wake up, I turn on Twitter, Pringles is tweeting out a Pringles commercial with Byron Pringle in it. So, K-Staters are there everywhere right now, and you gotta love to see it. Jordan Willis and Byron Pringle, what they're doing in the playoffs, it's really neat to see, and I know for me, it makes me a proud alum.
Yep, me too. I can echo those same comments, my friends. And on that, we end this episode 84 of the Purple Project Podcast weekly edition, folks. I swear, I am feeling better. My voice is about out of feel for today. I have to save it and get some good night's rest on that. So there's that as well. Another jam-packed episode for you guys this week. It'll be out tomorrow evening, ready for your weekend and heading into championship weekend. I'm gonna let Alex have his last words and close us out.
Well, Eddie, hope you feel better. I'm with you there, man. My allergies are killing me. That's not as bad, but I'm with you there. Hope you feel better. Everybody out there, hopefully it's a good weekend of sports. Be sure to tune in here on the Cats as they take on Ole Miss on the road. Show up to Bramlin, support the women's Cats, support the lady Cats, I should say, support Ava Lee and that whole crew out there as they play at TCU. And we'll be back next week to discuss it all. So have a great night.
Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.